Around Comics, Episode 20.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, a weekly roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the producer of the show, Brian Salazar.
Hello, everyone.
And as always, our longtime Around Comics contributor, Mr. Tom Caters, is here also.
Hello, everyone.
And our guest this week is the writer of the upcoming series Casanova. He will also be at the helm for Marvel's relaunch of Punisher War Journal. He is Matt Fraction.
Hi.
Matt, welcome to the show, and thank you for being on Around Comics.
Thank you for having me. How's it going?
It's going very well. It's a beautiful Friday night in Chicago. You know, the birds are chirping.
No better We're sitting inside talking about comics.
Hey.
No better way to spend it than around old books.
I want to remind everyone that Around Comics is recorded every Friday from 7 to 9 at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, please come by and introduce yourself. We would love to meet you. Dark Tower is now offering a 20% discount on everything in the store during our show recordings. Just mention Around Comics when you check out and you'll get 20% off. It's that easy. Today we want to talk with Matt about a variety of things, including the differences of writing for his creator-owned projects and the company-owned properties that he's working on. But before we dive into that topic, we want to spend a couple minutes getting to know Matt. So we'll start out. Matt, introduce yourself and tell us how you got into comics.
Matt Fraction, 30 years old, Kansas City, Missouri, Planet Earth. Hi, Mom. How did I get into comics? I was a loudmouth on the internet. And I started poking around a couple of different message boards and just kind of writing my ass off. And somehow was able to kind of turn one into the other. Like the writing about comics and sort of being around these people led to attention and exposure and people willing to take chances on me. And I started off... writing about monkeys.
Well, Tom, you should like that. Tom's a huge fan of anything monkey.
Yes,
well,
any and all.
I did a book with Andy Kuhn called Mantooth that ran actually with Robert Kirkman's Funkatron Press in a book called Double Impact.
Mm-hmm.
Double something. It was two somethings that were very exciting. And Joe Casey and Charlie Adler's Code Flesh was in the other half. This was later collected as the annotated Mantooth from AIT Planet Lair.
Those Planet Lair guys, they love monkeys.
Yeah, there was you a see Skype.
Skype was Planet Lair, wasn't
yeah.
it? Now, you started out, you were talking about writing about comics. Was that the basement tapes on CBR that you and Joe Casey were working on?
No, even before that was sort of the... comic proto-blog Savant that I helped start with a couple of other guys. And that kind of spun out of the original Warren Ellis forum on Delphi.
The infamous Warren Ellis forum.
Yeah,
and that led to a CBR column called Pop Life, which is probably the most ill-conceived column of all time. And, then I actually kind of had more books out and about, and then started Basement Tapes, actually just... after stuff was existing, which was nice.
So what was your first published comic work?
It was Mantooth. Double comic.
Double good.
Well, you mentioned, you know, Warren Ellis a minute ago. It seems like everywhere we look, Warren Ellis is talking about this Matt Fraction cat who's going to, you know, come in and save comics. What's your relationship like with Warren Ellis?
I am not Warren Ellis. First and foremost, I've read people who suspect that what's it called, sock puppet, where somebody on the internet pretends they're somebody else to say things. I am not a sock puppet.
Well, you have to admit, with a name like Matt Fraction, that does almost sound made up.
Yeah, no, it's totally made up. I mean, it's a
we're gonna have to ditch all our Warren Ellis questions thinking that we can expose
Uh-oh.
You.
Careful, you're angering my hounds.
Uh-oh, yeah, yeah. Warren, Matt is going to sick his dogs on us.
What was the question?
Oh,
Manchu.
Tom wants to know all about the monkeys.
To a graphic novel called Last of the Independents that Kieran Dwyer drew.
Mm-hmm.
That was very awesome. Warren, that was the question. It was about Warren. no pressure, right? No.
Don't worry about it.
Warren saying good things about you doesn't in any way build expectations in people's minds.
No. Yeah, crazy is that? You know, it's you talk about like one guy in the industry right now that's really respected as a writer and says, you know, this kid is good. It's, you know, it's like Jimi Hendrix saying, yeah, this cat over here can play guitar. You ought to check him out. You know?
Yeah, first off, I love the guy's work. So, I mean, it's extraordinarily flattering. He's been incredibly kind and he's really funny. So he's just, you know, it's nice to not have drama on the internet and just sort of make each other laugh over stupid shit.
And he's internet Jesus, so
apparently internet Jesus, yeah.
Well, Matt, we've all read the advanced copy of Casanova, and everybody on the panel here absolutely loved it. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about Casanova? Because honestly, after reading it, I can't begin to tell people what this book is about.
Yeah,
I know I like it, I just don't know what it is.
I always felt like if I could get you through the first issue, you were on the team. You know what I mean? It's kind of a nightmare explaining everything that happens in those first few pages. Like, but if you make it all the way through, I think you know what the book is about. But getting there is a problem. Casanova is a science fiction super spy epic about a young gentleman named Casanova Quinn, who is a man of leisure and art forgery and burglary and things like that. His father, Cornelius Quinn, is the director of a international law enforcement division called Empire. His twin sister, Zephyr, is the star agent. And then a lot of things happen in a very short period of time that sees Cass blackmailed into joining Empire as a double agent and sort of betraying his father.
Now, you obviously have a lot of influences in this book. You know, the few that I picked up, you know, of the many that I'm sure are in there, you know, stuff like Armand Flint
which I actually only just saw that very recently. Like,
really?
More recently than people think. Yeah. That was just one of those blind spots I had for a long time.
That's funny, because I would have thought for sure that would have played part of your...
The campiness.
Yeah.
Of it.
Yeah, no, and I've only ever seen one episode of The Avengers.
Wow.
Well, yeah. And where are you pulling this from exactly?
Oh, heaven.
I described this book as Austin Powers meets Jacob's Ladder. It was
mind bending.
It was fun and exciting and just mind bending, like Tom said. And
awesome. You guys are like the first people I've talked to that have read it that aren't like my friends or, you know, my wife. So,
oh, nice.
Thank you very much.
There's a scene in the book where Cass is at a funeral, and
yeah,
all of the speech balloons are empty, and
yeah,
it was probably the most powerful non-dialogue scene I've ever seen. It was you knew that, you know, it just told you right there that these people are screaming and arguing, and everything that they're saying means absolutely nothing, and there was no better way to show that than just having these word balloons with nothing in them. And that was brilliant. So
thank you very much. Thank you.
Was that your idea or the
I wrote a book, this 30 Days of Night book, mm-hmm, called Juarez that Ben Temple Smith did. And it was this kind of very elaborate crime story, very sort of Big Sleep-esque. And I had to write a scene about two guys coming up with the idea of pulling off a kidnapping, you know? And it was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever written. And coming from a guy that's written about talking monkeys, that says something.
Don't sell that short, though.
I'm just, you know, in terms of, if that's tipping my ridiculous sensor, then it's pretty ridiculous. So I just cut the scene out. And it worked I thought, really well. And it was just one of those things where you believe in the intelligence of your audience, and you believe that they're going to come along with you. And as a reader, I love putting things together instead of everything being spoon-fed. And when you see these two guys grabbing a girl, you're going to know that's the discussion they had.
Well, that was sort of what I was, you know, so impressed with. Is so many books today, you see it, everything spelled out for you, and writers afraid to challenge the readers. And was there ever a point where you were thinking, you know, this is too much for people to handle, or?
No. I'm sort of all about, like, no passive consumption. You know, I believe that comic readers are of above average intelligence and want to be rewarded for that instead of being spoon-fed everything, you know?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think a lot of comics, especially mainstream comics, fall in between being really simple and fun and being complicated and challenging, and they fall into the most boring realm that you can be in. Like, it's not either, it's just sort of there.
Yeah, I think this is, like, with something like Casanova, it's the kind of thing, like, if you take the ride, you know, if we can earn your trust and kind of entertain you and you come along with us, then ultimately a lot of these kind of, there's even a line at the end that sort of is kind of the get out of jail free card where he's like, yeah, well, none of this makes sense to me either. And I'm just going to go along with it. And that's what you do. You go along with it. Like, you know, and hopefully you come through on the other side. And like I said, if you're with me on the last page, I think it's the start of a beautiful friendship.
Well, you got three friends here.
That's, right on.
Probably one of the biggest compliments I can pay to any book these days is that whenever I finish reading it, if I immediately have to go back and read it again to get it and really
awesome.
Enjoy it, there's been probably three books this year I've been able to do that with, and that's Brian Wood's Local, number one, which I thought was just brilliant. Charlie Houston's Moon Knight number one, which was a much better read the second time around, and Casanova. So those are three of my
That's some heavy
books.
Company. Thank you.
The biggest compliment I can pay is that at the end where you have your little your thing about Phil Spector, where you kind of talk about that influence. It's actually the first time anyone's ever written anything at the end of a comic book like that that actually made more sense. Made the book make more sense to me, you know?
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, because after I read the Phil Spector thing, I was like, oh, you know, I exactly get it now, because it sort of works that same way where you can take any piece of it and enjoy, you know, just that section of the story.
Yeah.
But
I
on
mean,
the
this,
whole, it's a, you know, it works also.
Thank you. I mean, a big part of this was, like, it's my first ongoing series, and I'm not so far away from the time in my life when, like, $2 was kind of a big deal. And I don't know, I just feel like we got to earn every penny, and we got to earn every reader, and we got to earn every page flip, you know? And so that's such a thing. When you finish a book and you immediately have to read it, or you find yourself thinking about it days later, that's when you know you someone's really connected with you. You guys are saying this means the world to me, so thanks. Mission accomplished.
You're listening to Around Comics. It's like talking to your best friend's sister, and she's hot.
Well, you know, speaking of the $2 thing, that's another thing about Casanova, and another connection to Warren Ellis here, is that it's in what we've started to call the Fell format. It's 16
which
pages.
I believe Image is calling the Slimline format.
A Slimline.
Okay. It's why did you decide to have Casanova be in that format? And, or was that something that Image approached you about?
There's two different reasons. One is it sounded fun, and I'll get back to that in a second. And the other is wanting to earn everything. And part of that is minimizing risk for all parties, for Image, for Gabriel Ba, my collaborator, for readers, for everyone. It's $2, it's 16 pages. It's not a lot of time, it's not a lot of money. You know, if the series completely implodes, Image isn't out thousands and thousands of dollars on a $4 book that nobody bought, you know?
Right.
So I wanted to ask them. I feel like I'm a complete idiot most times, and anytime anyone wants to publish something I write, I feel like it's a joke or something. Like, I want to make sure that, okay, well, since you want to take this chance on me, I want to do everything I can to minimize your risk and maximize your return. So it was as low risk a way to dip my toe into the water of a monthly ongoing as possible. And it sounded fun. When Ellis was putting Fell together, I was doing X-Men Unlimited story.
Mm-hmm.
And there was sort of Wolverine remembering all the different ways that he's been killed, but he's never really died. So like the whole story is about that's sort of the, it separates Wolverine from, you know, the rest of humanity. The one thing that unites all of us is the one thing that keeps him separate. And I just kind of made all this crazy stuff up. And then I got the note from editorial that I needed to refer page and panel to everything to make it all continuity tight, you know? So as Ellis is telling me about, like, as the idea for Fell is coming together, I was reading all of these Essential X-Men trades. And all, like, the kind of classic Claremont run of that book are, like, 16, 17, 18 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
Which I kind of forgot. Like, they all seem longer, don't they? Like, when you remember, like, the Dark Phoenix
books. Oh, sure. You feel like that's a little novella. Like, yeah.
Yeah, no, those were, like, 18-page comics.
Ellis actually went on about this in his last issue of Fell, and, you know, talking like you did about Phil Spector at the end of Casanova, he talked about Will Eisner and what he could get into a story that just stuck with you in a small format.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's a limitation. And I kind of welcome the challenge. And I have a day job, too. I wanted to make sure I wasn't going to screw retailers or readers over by not being able to deliver. And I felt pretty confident that I could nail 16 pages a month.
There's a lot in those 16 pages, man.
Yeah, that's kind of backfired because it's actually more like 48 pages.
Well, I certainly, when I read it, it didn't seem like, well, it was 32 pages. This first one was, but even so, there was so much in it that... Like, I think all three of us actually had to go back and read it at least one more time just to follow everything and try and soak it all in because it was so dense of a work.
I tell you, we've been kissing your butt so much. Let's kiss the butt of the artist because that was another thing that I loved about the book. So
Gabriel Baugh is going to explode. You heard it here first. Write the date and time down. Put $20 on the table. He's amazing, is he not?
Oh, it's for folks that haven't seen any of the preview pages, the line work that is done in this it's kinetic and it's gorgeous, and it's a two-color book that you never even think about being a two-color book. It's black and green, which works so good for the surreal atmosphere of it. Did he do his own coloring on the book?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Okay, you could tell that was just the vision that he had. And, yeah, I thought it was just a wonderfully laid out book.
Thank you.
You just get wrapped up in this whole surreal atmosphere that it creates. So, you know, and the cover's great. I want a poster of that cover, man.
This should be coming to shops next week.
Great, well, we'll get one up in here.
Yeah, check your box from Diamond.
I thought, you know, one of the most interesting things in the artwork was that in some of the places where you sort of experimented with the frame, and you're using an eight-panel grid,
you didn't really necessarily
stick with that throughout the entire book, literally like Warren does with Fell. You really took some chances and played with a lot of things, and I especially like the little, you know, talking heads giving you a different perspective on the story.
I saw that from old, like, romance comics.
Really?
Yeah, it's like old, like, Alex Toth romance comics. There'd be, like a drawing of, like, Betty Sue and Tommy sipping a malt at the malt shop. And then in between two panels, there'd be this, like, block of text and, like, Betty Sue's head at the bottom, like, after the malts, then we went out to Handjob Point and...
Yeah, but this one's about
the next panel is Handjob Point.
Yeah, but this one's like about the night nurse talking about the suave Mr. Casanova. I love the one with the dunce hat later on, though. So
thank you.
Now was Casanova?
And now, actually, Eric Stevenson, the editorial director of Image Comics, makes an appearance in a narrative panel in Casanova 2.
Oh, all right,
nice.
So I now own the copyright on Eric Stevenson. I own my own boss.
Are you breaking the fourth wall there with that, or is he?
The line is like Cass says something like, "Well, everybody was convinced I wasn't trans-dimensional assassin here to undo them from within, so everything was great. And then Eric is saying, don't forget, he's a trans-dimensional assassin here to undo everything.
Nice.
So it's the old, like, Stan Lee, like, you know, editorial voice I love.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to move on from Casanova. If the listeners out there haven't been enticed enough to pick this book up by now, after what we've talked about, then they're never going to be. So, you know, I'll plead with everyone, don't let this book get by you. It is really good. So,
thank you.
Let's move on to one of your other creator-owned works, and that is Five Fists of Science.
The Five Fists of Science! You have to bellow it really loud.
Sal's a much better bellower than I am.
Not today. So. I got a cold.
And actually, Sal is the only one that has... Tom, have you read any of this?
No, but I know what it's about.
Oh, okay. I'm the only one on the panel that hasn't even looked at this. So Sal keeps telling me it's really cool. So you guys are going to have to tell me about it.
Okay. So here's what you need to know about The Five Fists of Science. It is a 100% true story. Almost.
Yeah.
It stars Mark Twain and Nikola Tesla, who were very close friends. That's true. And it's about their plan to bring about world peace. This involves Twain's marketing and selling a weapon of Tesla's invention that is so terrible. If I had one, and Sal had one, and Chris had one, we would never do anything so crazy as start a war, because it would end the world. Twain, in effect, had created what we understand as détente, but this was in 1899. And they set about trying to sell world peace to the leaders of the free world. The problem with that plan is that there's a sort of evil... Of industrialists and magicians that are trying to bring about the apocalypse on their own timetable and don't appreciate any meddling. And they fight, and it's totally awesome. My sales pitch kind of peters out there at the end.
No, Casanova's coming out from Image. Who is publishing?
Also from Image.
Also from Image.
Okay. May 31st. In stores, May 31st. It's 12 pages, full, beautiful color, art by Mr. Steven Sanders, who is a god unto men, and it's for like $12.95.
Awesome.
It's you know, the throughout the entire book, you know, especially in the very beginning, they set you up, you know, he sets you up with the whole thing, making you think that this is all true, but not letting you know how much really isn't and how much is. So I have no idea. I mean, it's so plausible. A lot of it seems very plausible. But then every time you read something, you know, in the very beginning, he gave sort of character descriptions of all the characters in the book. And he just completely, you know, told you everything that they did was wrong and a lie. But then the next page you have, you know, Thomas Edison or someone, you know, telling you that everything in the book is true. So,
when the giant robot shows up, we're clearly in the realm of the fictional.
Clearly not.
But the book opens up with an essay, I swear to God, written by Nikola Tesla, talking about the future being fought by automatons.
Well, I'm such a sucker for that type of stuff, because I think, especially in modern society, people have such little actual knowledge of what people like Mark Twain were like, or people like Tesla were like, that these books do a really interesting thing, and sort of you can get away with tricking people far more nowadays with stuff like that than you could in the past.
And but really, the trick really kind of ends when the giant robot actually shows up.
I bought it all.
I mean, the Nazis had robots.
Morgan and Edison screwed Tesla out of billions of dollars. Billions.
Oh, sure.
Edison waged a war of slander against Tesla his entire career. Twain really was in Europe, really was mixed up with the armistice movement, and really was a good friend of Tesla. I have a photograph of Twain in Tesla's lab I can show you guys.
And I love their Unplugged
Tesla
album.
Credited Mark Twain with saving his life.
Really?
Tesla wanted to build robots to fight war, and Mark Twain wanted to end it. Mark Twain called it peace by compulsion. So they had this plan. This was their actual idea.
How did you find, just, I mean, what got you interested in those characters enough to research this and come up with this story?
This is going to sound, it was totally magic. I was looking up the etymology of the line, thunder's great, but lightning gets the job done. and it was Mark Twain. And in the finding of this, I found that in connection with an essay about Twain and Tesla's relationship. And the minute I found out that Twain and Tesla were friends, I said, they fight crime. You know, they save the world. This summer, you can't spell action without TNT. And, you like know, it just, it became, it, the whole story fell together in my head.
Well, Tesla's certainly a character. I mean, some of the
I didn't make up any of the weird stuff about Tesla.
I mean, some of his inventions and things that he was working on and sort of the mystery that surrounds him, it's perfect for that sort of telling because he could, you know, you're with a guy like that, you're not sure what is real or what isn't because the stuff that he did do is so fantastic.
Well, and we would recognize him today as having obsessive compulsive disorder and being probably having Asperger's syndrome or being a highly functional autistic.
Mm-hmm.
He did towards the end of his life, but for the most part, he didn't write stuff down. He would build things literally in his head and then be done with them. They would work in his head just fine, so he didn't have to build the physical thing. So a lot of his inventions we can't replicate or we don't know how to replicate because the plans don't exist.
So he must have made a smaller version of that robot, right?
Your only exaggeration is
the size of it.
When he died, the Pentagon seized all of his papers, and they are classified to this day.
God, that is
That blow your mind.
let's let the listeners get up off the floor.
That.
And Tesla is the kind of guy who would mention in a letter, oh, yeah, so I invented a thing that was this weapon, but the military didn't want it because it's too scary. Anyway.
It's called the teapot, and you can listen to music.
Later, he was talking about having invented a death ray that would crack the world in half.
Good Lord.
Who knows?
That is fertile ground for a writer right there.
Or a podcast,
yes.
Just Mark Twain and Nikola Tesla being buddies. Like, that's just, it has to, it's a story right there. That's just, what are they like in the room together? How do they eat together? It's too many questions. And the whole kind of thing fell into my head kind of all at once. As I started to do research, the story started to become true. I'm not kidding. I made it up, and then it was all true.
Well, I've gotten about halfway through the copy of the preview you sent me, and the only thing keeping me from reading the rest of it is I don't want to ruin it because I'm waiting for the trade. I've ordered the trade already, and I want to have it in my hands because I'm really enjoying it. But I'm like, I know I'm going to enjoy this even more when I sit there and page through it and read it because, like Tom, I'm a sucker for that kind of storytelling and
you guys are kind of hardcore like me. Like, reading comics off a screen ain't the same thing.
No.
And I've been waiting for this book for like 3 years. We started working on it 3 years ago. I swear to God, when I get like the copies from the printer next week, I think I'm probably gonna cry. I just it's been like.
I can't imagine. That's got to be.
It's actually been, I think, the closest thing to like giving birth I will ever know.
Well, another thing you're working on, which has been announced recently, is you're going to be writing Punisher War Journal.
I am going to be writing the shit out of Punisher War Journal.
So you're going from Tesla and Twain to Frank Castle. Not a big jump there.
Yeah. No. Totally same street, different address.
Well, are you excited about? I mean, obviously.
Oh, yeah, it's a blast.
I mean,
oh, my God.
That is such a high-profile book that, you know, honestly, we're going to buy stuff that says Matt Fraction on it now, but there are legions of people that, you know, honestly don't care that you're writing it, and yeah, it's going to be an added bonus, hopefully, for them. You know, that's a big charge taken on Punisher.
Dude, 12-year-old me thinks I am the coolest guy in the world.
Were you a fan of Punisher growing up?
Yeah, it kind of, I really loved the Stephen Grant, Mike Zeck book. I think like everybody, mm-hmm. and then the kind of the ongoing that came out after that, and I actually got out of Punisher during like the Jim Lee era on War Journal. Like I remember the last like Punisher storyline I really loved was like that 2-part thing, like six Punisher War Journal, like 6 and 7.
Yeah, it was either 6 or 7, or 7 and 8 maybe.
Something like yeah.
Yeah, right in there.
I actually have I've stolen all the Punisher comics off of the internet and I have them on my computer. I could look it up right now, but I don't want to wreck the precious technology that's letting us communicate.
Well, I tell you what, we actually a friend of mine from a forum, you know, everybody has friends on forums now, who is a huge Punisher fan, and he was kind enough to send in some questions for us. So these are from Jason in Seattle, Washington. We'll just start at the top here. It says, I would like to know how long Matt is signed up to write it and how far out he has Punisher War Journal planned at this point.
As long as they'll have me, and about the first... not quite a year.
Okay, so wow. About 12 issues or so?
Yeah, the first three, I mean, I'll say as long as they'll have me. The first mm-hmm. three are sort of a Civil War
related
story, and then there's sort of the follow-up. So I've got, like, I guess through like 9 or 10 maybe in my head.
Okay. Now, is your editor on that Axel Alonso?
Yes, he is.
Well, there. Do you ever listen to Word Balloon with John Suntress?
I downloaded it. I have it on my desktop, but I haven't listened to it. He just did a show with Axel, right?
Yeah, and just warn you, Axel talks you up big.
Oh, awesome! Because I totally don't need another guy in comics talking about
Actually, I don't think I have to rewind it in my head, but I don't think he actually named you by name. But he said something along the lines of, the guy that we've got picked out to write Punisher War Journal is going to blow your flipping mind. I think it was something like that. So
awesome! You should see the art. Holy crap!
Yeah, who's doing the art on that? I don't even know.
Ariel Olivetti.
Ariel.
Oh. Ariel did the Space Ghost series that Joe Kelly wrote.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, wow.
That. Yeah, that should be... Wow, that's going to be interesting.
And we're taking it straight from his pencils. Oh, I'm blanking on the name.
Well, if you want someone to go on the internet and start bad-mouthing you so expectations lower...
Yeah, just talk to Tom.
Yeah, I have a lot of free time. And a lot of vitriol. Just like a dispute. Yeah, not about you, but I can adapt it.
Dean White, the guy that colors Black Panther, is doing the colors over Ariel's like pencil work,
mm-hmm.
and it's so gorgeous. Oh my God, it's great. And yes, please talk as much crap about me on the internet as possible. my delicate little ego can definitely handle it.
Well, back to Axel Alonso for a second. That was a really fun interview to listen to. And when I was done, I was like, man, that is the guy that I want to work for. He sounds like a cool dude.
Yeah, and Axel is kind of the guy behind the guy. Like, if you look at his career, like, the books he's worked on, the creators he's broken, I mean, part of the reason that I wanted to do Punisher as badly as I did was a chance to work with Axel, to work with sort of, like, this amazing editor. And it's been great so far.
That is awesome. Well, next from Jason is... and this probably goes right back to Axel Alonso, was how was he selected to write the book? Did Marvel come to you, or did you go to Marvel?
Marvel came to me. Axel read my first graphic novel, which is called Last of the Independents. I mentioned it earlier. Kieran Dwyer drew it. It's out from AIT Planet Lair. And it's a crime comic. It's about a bank robbery. It's cowboys and gangsters going at it in the Nevada desert. And he was a big fan, and I did the X-Men Unlimited story out of his office with Warren Simons. So we've just been kind of talking on and off. And when they decided that it was time to relaunch Punisher War Journal, I was the guy he called, and God bless him for it.
Awesome. Next question, and this is one that you can't answer, and I actually don't want you to answer, but people are really... concerned about it. So is what side is Frank gonna be on in Civil War? And he's not gonna answer. Good guy.
Oh, there you go.
Silence.
But people are very intrigued.
Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Does Frank Joyner, Frank Castle strike y'all as a joiner?
No.
Frank, the kind of guy that like wants to team up and have like talks and stuff.
Let's go have coffee, Spidey. I think that's going to be interesting. So you say that the first part of War Journal really is centered around Civil War.
Yeah, the first like Frank. I'm sorry, I have to be kind of really careful.
Sure.
I kind of forget what people know and what people don't know, and there's a lot of stuff I'm not supposed to talk about. So, sounds like a cop out, it totally is, and I apologize, but I don't want to. Yes, the first three are Civil War issues.
I'm sorry, Tom. Is there anything coming out of the recent developments from Daredevil? And I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, but the Punisher is...
Stop pushing towards the tar pit.
Well, no, I'm just wondering if that is going to lead into the War Journal series that you're doing in any way, or is that not going to be a part of it at all?
If I told you that Ed and I are friendly and talk on the phone from time to time, you might see something like that, but it's not there's not a giant arrow. It's not like, you know what I mean? Like, no, not really, but sort of.
Can you tell him to answer my emails, please?
Ed Brubaker?
Yeah.
you obviously, we always talk about this because it's like Sal's crowning moment in comicsdom. Actually, Sal, there was a character in Daredevil called C.O. Salazar for like two panels, and Ed said he actually named him after Sal. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So
I can maybe continue. Wait, did you get killed? What happened?
No, I'm just a prison guard. I don't nothing yet. He just talked to Matt Murdock at this point. So I'm hoping for him to be a reoccurring character, and I'd really like, you know, maybe the Punisher to blow his head off or
He'll
something would be kind of
cool. Tortured for 12, one panel for
yeah.
12 issues. They just slowly watch him.
Wait, but if he's a guard though, I mean, he's on the side of angels in Frank's eyes, so you'd be safe.
Yeah, true enough.
Yeah, Bullseye's taking you out.
We're just gonna.
It's so weird. Like I'm calling a fictional character by his first fictional name. Like he's a friend of mine. Like we hang out and stuff.
Hey, that's part of why we do this is the connection with these characters.
And no, dude, I did that like talking to Axel about. Never mind.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry. I didn't
just can't do
it. Whatever you say.
All right, you two behave. I'm going to go to the next question, so we'll take him away from the fire here. I think that you can answer this one. Will you be messing with Frank's origin or keeping current with the Marvel Universe version?
No, it's the Marvel Universe Frank. It's Frank Castle.
Okay. And the last one from Jason here is, did you and Garth Ennis have any conversations on what he could or couldn't do with Frank in War Journal?
No, Garth and I haven't spoken about that stuff at all.
Are you a fan of the Max series?
I love it.
Yeah.
Holy crap. It is like the blackest, strongest coffee in the world.
Yeah, it's
I think it's amazing, and I was so kind of flattered and excited that Axel approached me about War Journal that I didn't actually realize that our books were going to be running concurrently. And then that's what made me freak out. It wasn't the idea of working for Marvel or the idea of writing Punisher. It was I'm writing the Punisher book while Garth is doing his Punisher book.
Are they tied together? Is Max, is
no,
that
no,
out?
No, you know, like, Garth's book exists, like, in the, quote, real world, unquote. Like, they spell Rikers with an I over there. We spell it with a Y. You know what I mean? Like, they're two different...
It's out of regular Marvel continuity.
Yeah. Garth's, like, little gnarly evil cul-de-sac is his own to play with.
You know, what I love about it is that that never gets spelled out for you. You always feel like Spider-Man may be swinging around a building... But it's totally a Punisher book.
I just always imagined that like Spider-Man would swing around like the corner of a building in Garth's Max book and like see a school child being raped and just like break into tears and like
be hit
wonder
by a
what
truck.
He's done with his life. Just recoil in the utter horror that book wallows in.
Listen to a RoundComics.com podcast new every Monday. For once, you won't be lying to your parents when you tell them you're not looking at porn.
Well, since you've done, you must have done your research for Punisher. I'm assuming that you said you downloaded all the.
I haven't read them, but I have them in case somebody. I haven't. This is gonna suck. This is
no. This is a tradition on Around Comics. We got to hit you with. We did this with Phil Hester and Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Ant-Man trivia, and we got to do Punisher trivia with you. So these are just a few questions, Punisher trivia, and they're all multiple choice. And I don't actually, because I got these off the internet, they may all be wrong, but we'll go anyway. All right. The first question is.
I just want to, when future me goes back and wonders where it went wrong, Matt, it's right here where your Punisher cred went out the window.
Okay, watch, Warren Ellis is going to take away his golden touch once he hears about the Punisher trivia.
How did he not know that?
No research and fool.
Everyone knows Frank had a rabbit when he was a child.
Don't give him the answers. All right.
I love you, Bun Bun.
The first question is, in what comic did Punisher make his first appearance?
It was Amazing Spider-Man 127, 187?
129. I didn't even have to give you the multiple choices for that. You had it right off the bat.
I had it between 60 issues. That's pretty hard.
That's not bad.
He didn't have it right.
Close.
I would have guessed 129.
which one of these creators created the Punisher? Was it Stan Lee?
No.
Steve Ditko?
Nope.
Don Pendleton?
Nope.
Jerry Conway?
There you go.
That's it. Yeah.
Gary. Ding ding ding.
Drawn by Ross Andrew.
Wow, see?
What are you talking about? You don't know Punisher. You're sailing,
like,
man.
This is like Punisher 101. This is like the first day of the first.
I didn't want to make it too tough on it. They might get a little. There's one in here I don't know if you'll know, but it really has nothing to do with the comic book. But during the Vietnam War, Frank Castle served as A, Navy SEAL, B, a Marine captain, C, a Army sergeant, or D, an Army Ranger.
He was a ranger, was he not?
He was not. He was a marine captain. He did have ranger training, though.
Maybe in a.
Well, that's what I meant.
Maybe in the Max version, he was.
Yeah.
My grandfather was a ranger in World War II, so I kind of wanted it to be like my grandpa. Uh-huh, now you're gonna feel bad for me blowing the question.
Right. You write comics.
Veterans.
Here we go. True or false? Frank Castle was born Francis Castelloni. Castiglione?
I think that's true, actually.
It is true.
Mispronounced, but true.
Yeah, whatever. okay, here's one.
This is my favorite.
The Punisher
He was actually born Francis Castiglione. That's the big secret in our first arc. Francine.
Split the internet in half. Furious.
There's your big spoiler.
All right, the Punisher once killed a young couple for which of the following misdemeanors? Was it jaywalking, underage drinking, littering, or speeding?
That was an issue where he completely lost his mind, and he killed a cabbie for running a light. He killed somebody for littering, and he killed somebody for jaywalking. I don't remember which is good.
You're right. It was jaywalking was the young couple.
Okay, because he Stephen Grant was just like, oh, yeah, he was on Crazy Juice, but now he's okay.
Okay, this is the last one, and this may be the toughest. The 2004 Punisher movie starred Thomas Jane and John Travolta.
Yes, true.
Name one of the two other films that these two have been in together.
Thomas Jane and John Travolta?
I'll give you a hint that in the other two films, they did not have any speaking parts together.
Wow.
Well, that should just be obvious now.
Well, I told you that was going to be the toughest one.
Hey, let me think about this for a minute.
Get off the internet. Get off the internet.
IMDb.
Oh, wait, it's radio. It sucks, doesn't it, to listen to someone think? Was it that...
Gears turning.
I give up.
Either The Thin Red Line or...
Face Off
was the other one. Yeah, they were both in... But Thomas Jane was like a secondary character that never said anything.
I had no idea on those either,
that's
Matt.
That's cruel.
Yeah, that was cruel.
So, I thought it was like one of the... What was the movie where Travolta was like the fat army lawyer that was...
My dad loves that movie.
What was that? It's
horrible.
Not Basic Training.
Basic? I don't know.
Maybe
it was basic.
Yeah.
He just yells at people a lot.
And Sam Jackson's in it, and he's Sam Jackson.
It's like he followed up like a civil action with the military action movie. Yeah, I
better than Battlefield Earth.
Well, I think you did pretty good. I guess you can keep writing.
I hope I've made up for my the gaps in my knowledge with enthusiasm and good intentions.
Absolutely.
Much like the SAT.
Well, Matt, we usually have a main topic, which I want to kind of come back around to, and you're the perfect person to talk about this today. Now that we've discussed some of your creator-owned works, and now that you're doing a very established Marvel property, for you as a writer, what is the major difference between the two?
You know, I mean, there's this is really kind of interesting because I can kind of talk about the Wolverine short that I did, but I mean, with something like Civil War, there's so many kind of parts that all are moving simultaneously. You know, there's a lot of vetting and kind of like everything, these big boats in the water, and we kind of have to zig and zag around them. You know what I mean? Whereas with Casanova, I can literally put anything I want to into a story and not have to care what anybody thinks or says about it. So, you know, it's the difference between collaboration and sort of being a solo act.
Which one do you prefer right now? And I know that you're probably excited about both, but which one really gets your juices going?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like Civil War, it's the writing a book that's involved with this kind of massive line-changing thing is so bizarre and so entertaining. Like, it's just so weird. I can't, like, resent the experience. I'm just kind of amused by it all. So it's fun, but I mean, obviously, with something like Casanova, the sky's the limit. You know what I mean? So it kind of can adapt to a lot more stuff. I can kill whoever I want. You know, there isn't 30 years of continuity that I can blow in multiple choice. It's all in my head. You know what I mean? So there's a kind of, with Punisher, you're sort of adapting. You're kind of like you're carrying the baton for a little part of a very long relay race.
But at the same time, that has to be pretty special because it is a character you know grew up with and.
Oh, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. But with Casanova, I've built that world like from its first inch entirely in my head. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a couple forum posts. Let the folks at the Around Comics forum know that this was what we were going to be talking about a little bit this week. And this one is actually from Steve Bryant, who is the artist for Athena Voltaire. So,
oh, excellent.
Have you taken a look at that yet, Matt?
I have.
Isn't that a good book?
It's really something.
Yeah, so I'm looking. They finally got picked up by another publisher, so I think that's coming out sometime in August. So.
That does my heart a world of good. That's excellent.
Yeah, that's the whole speakeasy thing was. Did you have any friends in the industry that were doing books for speakeasy?
Yeah.
That really hurt a lot of guys.
It's heartbreaking.
Right. I see a lot of those books have started to be picked up, so that's good for them. But anyway, this is from Steve, and he says, "For me, there's no question of what I prefer." Creator-owned material all the way. It's not like I dislike our company-owned material. In fact, I think that the big two are putting out their best material in years. Arguably, there's never been a time where both companies have been this strong in terms of content. That said, there are invariably periods when characters and or titles that I like fall into disrepair. This is either due to an uninspired creative team or a creator who just doesn't share the same take as I do about a book or character. Is there anything more bothersome to read than the latest issue of your favorite comic book and say, but so-and-so would never do that? Says, the tendency for creators to feel they have to leave their mark on an icon during the course of their run is problematic for me as a reader. There are only so many times that I can hear, this is the issue where everything changes, or things will never be the same, or everything you know about character XYZ is wrong. There's only so much I can take.
I need to change something in this Punisher script. Hold still.
Everything. The first one's called Everything Changes.
Yeah. Yes. He goes on, but I think he kind of had the idea, and I think that's a lot of your... You know, I don't want to call them your more mature comic book fans these days, but you know, I know that I have really gravitated towards creator-owned works in the last, you know, five or so years.
Well, I mean, the dirty secret is, you know, Punisher is awesome and Punisher is fun, and working with Axel has been a blast, and Ariel does great work. But it's all of it feeds into the work where you don't have a boss, you know? And that's sort of ultimately with creator-owned work, you are your own boss, and you get to decide the fate and the destiny of the book. And it's, you know, one feeds the other. You know, there's never going to be a time where I'm not writing something that I own outright, you know? It's not worth it to me otherwise.
Well, besides the Punisher, is there any other character across either DC or Marvel that you can see your writing style fitting into, or you've just always wanted to write?
Yes, there are.
emphatically
so. I like Buck Rogers. I would love. I'm would love to write like Buck Rogers or Flash Gordon.
Well, I thought the whole Space Ghost thing was silly until I actually saw it and read it.
So, yeah, I know, right? Like, everybody thought that was going to be weird, and then Joe knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, it was awesome.
There's a bunch. I would kind of prefer not to bring up the Marvel stuff, just lest anyone think that I'm suggesting things that I'm not actually suggesting. I don't feel like work for hire is evil, and I don't, you know, I think if you find something to say and you have a good time writing what you're writing or drawing what you're drawing, then more power to you. But I think maybe a personal sense of betrayal when these sort of creators you love are just kind of working on big properties and not kind of generating their own worlds, their own fictions, you know?
Absolutely. We've talked about that.
Batman is, in fact, forever. Batman will always be around. Batman will exist. Batman's going to outlive us all. Superman is going to outlive us all.
No. I'm taking Superman out at some point.
Again.
Well, guys, we could probably talk on creator-owned versus, you know, company-owned properties, you know, for quite a while, but do you have any final thoughts on what we've talked about with Matt today? Tom, you?
Well, for the creator-owned versus, company, type stuff, I think there's really great stuff in both, and I think really great writers find a way to make both work for them. You know, there's a creative idea or, like, an interesting thought can come from all kinds of places. It can be just totally original, or it could be from some, you know, old Punisher you read when you were a kid and you remember thinking it would be great if the Punisher did that instead. So I think there's great stuff for both, and it's really great to see people that can do both really well.
Sal?
I think those guys are just sellouts. No. yeah, I mean, absolutely. I want to see writers, you know, like Matt and like a Warren Ellis and guys, you know, do both, because I love the stuff that I see them doing mainstream with characters that I grew up with, and I think today we're seeing some of the best comics from Marvel and DC because of that, because of these great writers. But at the same time, I want to see creator-owned stuff too, because they have the freedom to do so much more with it, and you know, it would be a shame to ever not see a book, you know, come out like Casanova Quinn or Fell, or you know, the dozens of other really good creator-owned stuff that are out there. So as long as we can hopefully keep that balance and have creators, you know, doing both, it's a great thing for the average fan.
We all win.
That's right.
We're all winners.
And our guest today, Mr. Fraction.
I think if I'm lucky, a kid is going to pick up, maybe not a kid, but someone's going to pick up an issue of Punisher, and maybe they're going to have a good time, and then they're going to notice that Casanova is on the rack too, and one will feed the next. And I think that, like I said, Superman and Batman are eternal, but it's sort of books like Punisher, books like Casanova or Fyfus or Fell or Athena Voltaire that people aren't going to instinctively look for or to know about. It's harder to get press coverage. It's harder to get Wizard to talk about any of this stuff. It's hard to get people to consider books that aren't Marvel superheroes and DC superheroes seriously. I think there's a lot of room on the shelves for a lot of different books, and better comics is a better industry. Stronger comics is a stronger industry.
All right. I agree with, you know, every point there. You know, one of the books that Sal gets absolutely tired of me talking about all the time is Queen and Country.
And me too. I'm tired of it too.
Is what?
Queen. I love Greg Rucka's work on Queen and Country because
Dude, I've been on the Oni comp list since before Queen and Country started, really? And it's still the book that I go out every Wednesday when it comes out to buy.
Isn't that a freaking awesome book?
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Here goes the episode.
Here goes the rant. Not enough people buy that book.
Correct.
And that's the thing. It goes back to...
It is criminally neglected.
To what Matt was saying is that, you know, you don't get the mainstream press because you're not Marvel or DC. You're coming out with this small book, and comic shop owners don't know about it. Comic shop, you know, comic buyers don't know about it.
I mean, you know, there's no reason that Queen and Country shouldn't be doing the same numbers that Checkmate just did.
Right.
And that's all there is to it. But it's a different thing. But who knows? Maybe a kid's going to pick up Checkmate and want to see... You know, this is, you know, hey, if you want to see Rucka's real deal, come check out Queen and Country, you know?
I like Checkmate. I thought it was pretty cool. But it's, on a scale of 1 to 10, is so many notches below the last issue of Queen and Country.
Yeah.
You said, and I tell you, I'm not even going to go into my big rant on it. Please go out and buy Queen and Country. And I'm hoping that they option it into a movie and people...
It's been optioned. Wolfgang Peterson has it.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
That is.
Or is there? Maybe that's White. I'm sorry. That's Whiteout.
Which is equally good.
Which also might maybe feature Tara Chase, maybe in a way if you squint.
You know, Greg Rucka actually said that was not Tara Chase. I don't know if I believe him.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, but there's a character in Whiteout that's real similar. So
legally, it is absolutely not Tara Chase.
But I think Matt here.
This is Matt Ricker, who is the owner of Dark Tower, has a comment.
In defense to the shop owners, at least on our part, we found that the increase in sales in independent comics has gone up. So we've dedicated basically half of our racks to independents.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, we give two rows of it's four rows basically, two rows of independents, one row DC, one row Marvel, knowing that both Marvel and DC are always going to sell no matter what. The increase on DC, of course, has been because of the writers. Marvel's, you know, steady numbers has always been because of the characters.
Yeah, that's fantastic to hear. Since Casanova is about to come out and Five Fists is coming out, I've been talking to a lot more retailers and hearing like good things all over. So that's fantastic to hear. That's just great.
Well, it's going to sell very well on the north side of Chicago.
Awesome.
So don't worry about that.
I will make sure to send you guys the Empire and Waste stickers when I get them back.
Hey. Cool. Are you going to be at Wizard World Chicago this year?
I'm going to Heroes Con because that's like my hometown show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go to San Diego. If someone's going to pay for me to go to Wizard World Chicago, I will go. But as close as it is, my show budget for the year is blown.
You can stay with us.
Yeah, we'll put you up for free, man. Don't worry.
That's good to know.
Sal snores, though.
I'll put you up for an extremely reasonable rate. Very, very cost effective.
Well, guys, we're going to wrap up the first half of the show here. I would like to... actually, Matt, you're gonna hang around for the rest of the show. Is that correct?
Yeah, if you'll have me, I'll hang out.
Hey, we're having a great time. So I do want to thank you for being on the show and let everyone out there know that the Five Fists of Science is coming out May 31st, correct?
Correct.
And retails for $12.95. Is published by Image, and Casanova hits bookshelves when?
Like June 14th or 17th, something like that.
Not soon enough.
Yeah, not soon enough.
It is. Go get that book, folks. So I think we're going to slide over to the news desk, and it's time to listen to Wire to Wire Comic News.
These are your top headlines for the week of May 15th, 2006. Our Gang Volume 1 hits shelves. A 96-page full-color volume of Our Gang by Walt Kelly has been released. Kelly's longest-running continuing series was based on actual people, the real-life characters of MGM's durable short film series Our Gang, aka The Little Rascals. Kelly created nearly 100 Our Gang stories by the end of its 59-issue run in 1949 on the immortal newspaper strip Pogo. This is the first in a series of books reprinting Walt Kelly's Our Gang stories. Suitable for both adults and children, Fantagraphics Books has lovingly restored the work from their comic book appearance, which will be printed in the original four-color splendor. Look for Our Gang to hit shelves, retailing for $12.95. Dark Horse Comics celebrates 20 years. Eric Powell draws Star Wars, Adam Hughes draws Hellboy, and Joss Whedon makes his artistic debut? That's just a smidge of what's included in this 25-cent gift to all the fans who have supported Dark Horse Comics through their first 20 years. Dark Horse Comics is proud to present Dark Horse 20 Years, a collection of original art by distinguished list of Dark Horse creators, past and present. Each page holds a different piece, each showcasing a character from the company's history of great original and licensed properties. Instead of drawing their own creations, these jaw-dropping talents have traded characters, each offering an unexpected take on one of the icons of Dark Horse. Dark Horse 20 Years will arrive in stores in July with a retail price of 25 cents. Gatos Goes Virgin. Michael Gatos, formerly of Alias and The Pulse, will illustrate Snake Woman, a new series created exclusively for Virgin Comics by Hollywood director Shakur Kapoor. It is the inaugural issue of Virgin's Director's Cut line of comics. Gatos has teamed with writer Zeb Wells to divulge the sexy and mysterious story of Jessica Peterson, a woman who will eventually kill 68 men. Snake Woman will be in stores on July 19th. Boom Studios adds nitroglycerin. Wizard Magazine's best new publisher, Boom Studios, has announced that an all-new, totally exclusive webcomic strip, Nitroglycerin, will appear weekly on the site's front page. Building off the new content of the site, Boom Studios is also moving its forums from its former home at Comic Book Resources over to www.boomstudios.com. Since being awarded Best New Publisher by Wizard Magazine and nominated for the same award at Diamond Comic Distributors for 2005, Boom Studios has seen an uptick in sell-through and initial orders. Selling most of its outstanding backlist now, Boom Studios is having a record year. Vertigo makes trade paperback announcement. As Vertigo's five new ongoing series, Loveless, DMZ, Testament, The Exterminators, and American Virgin, continue to score sold-out issues and gather critical acclaim, DC Comics announces the inaugural collected editions of these exciting new titles, each at a low introductory price. Each of these creatively dangerous and provocative new series are perfect additions to the Vertigo library, says Karen Berger, VP, Executive Editor of Vertigo. We're thrilled that these books have such a great buzz, and we're certain that even more readers will be taken in by the captivating characters and stories. All five trades have been priced at $9.99. For the entire list of the soon-to-be-released Vertigo trades, go to AroundComics.com. Dynamite Entertainment has released images and information concerning their debut of the all-new Highlander comic book. This series follows characters introduced in the first of the Highlander movie franchise. The series will feature an introductory priced zero issue, similar to the successful promotions used to launch Red Sonja and Battlestar Galactica to dizzying heights, as well as the all-star creative team of writers Brandon Jurwa and Mike Oeming. Dynamite is launching the series on all cylinders, with a painted cover by painter extraordinaire Gabrielle Diotto, and a 50-50 Highlander photo cover. The Chicago Museum of Contemporary Art is hosting an exhibit of acclaimed artist Chris Ware from May 6th to August 27th. Chris Ware, often described as an alternative cartoonist, is best known as the creator of the Acme Novelty Library, publications in various formats that feature the adventures of such characters as Quimby the Mouse and Jimmy Corrigan. Not quite comic books, not quite graphic novels, Ware's work mines art history, popular culture, and personal experience, capturing a queasy sense of reality of modern life in a retro style distinctly his own. For more on this exhibit and the amazing Chicago Museum of Contemporary Art, go to www.mcachicago.org. Civil War Frontline, the podcast. Join writer Paul Jenkins, editor Tom Brevert, and associate editor Corey Settlemeyer as they provide insight into the upcoming Civil War Frontline series. This accompanying 10-issue series to Civil War covers all the ins, outs, and outcasts of the war and the division it creates. Helping to stir debate, Frontline's embedded story arc will cover the war from the point of view of two embedded reporters from rival papers. Meanwhile, the accused story arc will address the consequences that face the lone survivor of the New Warriors, who is blamed for the Stanford tragedy that was the catalyst to the war. Go to Marvel.com and listen to the podcast and hear what kind of Civil War backlash is brewing in the pages of Frontline. These have been your top headlines for the week of May 15th, 2006. For the full version of these and other stories, go to www.aroundcomics.com, your source for the best in comics news, reviews, and opinions. And those are your top headlines this week. Let's start at the top. Looks like Our Gang is going to be collected, and it's a nice little introductory price of $13. I like the little rascals, like every other red-blooded American kid growing up. Anybody else excited about Little Rascals?
I was with the series until Green Goblin raped Darla.
They keep screwing with Buckwheat's origin over and over again.
The continuity of it is just...
I just hope it doesn't get canceled.
Wait till Infinite Rascals happens. It throws it all up. For
Crisis on Infinite Rascals.
Earth One Buckwheat's coming back. Cavalcade of jokes.
Earth Prime Buckwheat.
That's the same joke.
Yeah, next news item.
All right, guys. So that's coming out. Actually, I think it's already released, so check that
out. It's Fantagraphics, right?
Yeah, Fantagraphics. Yeah. And actually, this is a perfect book for our buddy Bruce Rosenberger over at Comics Cast. I'm sure he will give us
He'll
an in-depth...
It.
He will love that
he
book.
He read it when it was carved into stone back in the day. Sorry, Bruce.
Boy, Fantagraphics is really kind of becoming like the Criterion Collection of comics, aren't they?
Fantagraphics
is doing such
great.
A phenomenal like preservation and archiving job, and the Peanuts book and Dennis the Menace and everything else. I could probably spend all of my money just picking up their stuff.
Well, I'm glad that somebody has decided to do it and they found a niche that people really enjoyed. So I'm glad that they're doing it. I mean, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be standing outside of the comic shop waiting for, you know, the doors to open to run in and get Our Gang, but I'm glad they're doing it. And I'll take a look at it.
They have a very high respect for the medium, and it shows in the stuff that they do. And
well, and the additions are going to be beautiful, and you know, it's going
to
be great.
I can't wait to get on the internet and bitch about it, about the storylines.
No one understands Darla like you understand Darla.
Exactly. I have written better.
What was the dog's name?
Pee-wee? No.
Spike?
Spank?
Spanky?
No, Spanky was
Spanky was the fat kid. I don't know, but it was a pit bull. That's all I know.
Yeah,
Spanky was the leader.
Yeah.
Spanky was the best.
Because he wore the hat.
That made him.
I've written better.
What was the dog's name?
What?
The dog's name.
I can't think of the dog's name.
Petey.
Petey,
oh,
there
Petey.
We go.
Yeah,
Petey,
that's
Petey.
Actually Matt Ricker here was telling me, it's Petey, man, it's Petey.
Petey.
Tom, you wrote Our Gang slash fiction,
yeah,
didn't
I wrote
you?
Our Gang slash fiction. I have some Perfect Stranger stuff up there, too, if you guys are interested.
As Alfalfa slowly undid his overalls.
His Petey looks long.
In the back of the Model T that my grandpa bought for the Sunday touring car.
Great. We're going to get an explicit tag on this episode because of Our Gang.
There's never another day like Armistice Day.
If Alan Moore can do it to Alice
Dorothy,
in Wonderland,
and
then, you know, there's no rules anymore.
Matt, do you know about the Lost Girls?
Oh yeah! Are you kidding me?
Are you gonna?
I can't wait to beat up to that.
Oh, Just like back in the day, the way people used to, you know.
Yeah, like the old timey. No, I mean, I have the two the two issues that actually exist. I mean, no, I can't. It's a sort of legendary lost work, you know. I can't wait to see it.
It's not cheap though. It's what, like $75, and that's pretty expensive for getting your thrill. So
you know, it's one of those things that I think that it's going to be like it's literally a piece of comic art, you know. And it's Alan Moore. Come on,
the man can't do much wrong. That's for sure.
I mean, come on. It's not like Spawn versus Lost Girls. I mean, this is the real deal.
What's scary is that would sell.
Well, yeah, we'll sell more than fucking Lost Girls.
Variant covers.
All right, guys, let's move on to Dark Horse celebrating 20 years. That's kind of crazy.
Well, you know, I remember, it would have been their 5-year anniversary. Holy Christ, do I feel old. Because that was when they first published a Sin City story. It was in their 5th anniversary book.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's Dark Horse for me. Oh yeah, I know.
You better get writing, man.
I think you're younger, and actually, I think Tom is the baby on the panel today. But
I am 12 years old.
But I know that Sal and I are probably the oldest on the panel today. And
how old is everybody over there?
Actually, Sal's the elder statesman.
I'm 35.
I am 33.
I'm 27.
Okay, so I'm 30, so...
Yeah, so we're all... So, I mean, Dark Horse has kind of always been there for us as comic fans, it feels like, but they always felt like the new kid on the block.
Yeah, but Dark Horse won't, you know, help you move your, you know, move your stuff. they're not like a friend like that. They're not like a help you move a couch friend.
Hey, they may be that kind of friend for you, but not for us.
No, I'm saying they're not. That's, you know...
He tried.
I called them, like, hey, you help me move my couch? They're all like, I got something I got to do.
I don't care if it's Alien or Predator, as long as one of them shows up to help me move.
Well, anyway, back to the news story.
25 cents for the 20th anniversary. Dark Horse celebrates, and it's got all these different artists and writers. You know, for a quarter, I'm going to see what Joss Whedon can do as an artist. That just will be worth it for it. For me right there. So
wait, is there a Sin City in there or a Hellboy thing in there?
You know, it's what they said in the story is that blah blah blah, these jaw dropping talents have traded characters, each offering an unexpected take on one of the icons of Dark Horse. So I mean, if there's not a Marv or a Hardigan in there, I'll be absolutely shocked.
I think the interesting thing they're doing is, like, you know, they're having, like, you know, different what's his name, Powell from the Goon.
Eric Powell,
he's gonna do, you know, like Grendel story or something. You know, they're trying to sort of switch up what you know these guys have. They're not doing their own work, basically. Yeah. They're doing someone else's. So
that's, what did Joss Whedon do for Dark Horse? Was that the Serenity,
the Buffy book, and then the other Buffy book.
Well, duh, all that. Well, did Serenity come out?
Yeah, he didn't just do a
Serenity was Dark Horse too.
Okay, that's so, you know, for 25 cents, you can't beat it. Michael Gatos is signed on with Virgin to pencil a story, which...
Man, that's a killer... That book has a killer hook, doesn't it?
The snake will woman? Eventually kill 68 men.
Yeah, like, I'm sold. Okay, I'll check it out. I'll give you an issue, sure.
It's, I like Mike Gatos, so Mike Ol Gatos's art, but I think probably the most important part of the story that I see is that it looks like Virgin is not messing around.
Well, you know, even let's hope that best of intentions, you know what I mean? Dark Horse launched a superhero line back in the day, and I doubt very much that, like, there will be Ghost or a Will to Power are featured in that Dark Horse anniversary. God, I hope it happens, you know? More good comics are more good comics, and a publisher built to compete is excellent. I hope the market embraces this stuff.
Do you think the market is big enough to embrace another publisher that's going to try and be a major player? And I don't know if they even have the intention of, say, you know, we're going to be another Marvel or DC, but...
Here's the thing. You know, Virgin has all those mega stores, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't need us.
Well, that's just... I mean, the money that guy has, you know, this is just sort of...
Yeah, but I mean, he's got his own distribution network already set up. You know what I mean? Anything that gets sold outside of Virgin megastores are going to be gravy.
Yeah, true enough. I didn't think of it that way. That
do you are they only you, does Virgin do they sell comics in megastores now?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's right. They're crazy about the trades. I was
huge graphic novel section.
I went down to probably the most horrific place in the universe. It's called Disney Town in Orlando, Florida, and Disney Downtown. I mean, I've been there. Oh, it was probably one of the most horrific experiences of my life. And I ran into a Virgin megastore to get away from the bright shiny lights, and it was really cool because I went upstairs and they had a huge graphic novel section, and it was stuff that, you know, it's kind of hard to find in Chicago sometimes. So yeah. that was pretty cool. So
you know, the only this is kind of weird. The only place of mine that I personally have ever seen any of my work that wasn't a comic book store was a Tower Records in Tokyo.
That's odd.
It kind of be a little surreal.
It was completely bizarre. And Tokyo was pretty weird to begin with. That was just the icing on the cake, was like to find it Last of the Independents at a Tower Records in Tokyo was a real mind bender.
Mixed among the manga there?
They had a really robust section of American graphic novels. They had a wall of individual Black Hole issues when you couldn't get them in the United States.
Wow. I am in the middle of reading that right now.
Did you pick them all up and sell them on eBay?
No. I thought about picking them up for friends who, like, didn't have them, but didn't because it's Tokyo and the dollar is so weak. They would have been, like, $20 an issue.
Oof. Wow. It's
And I'm like, Black Hole, like, hardcore. I read that book from day one. I read that book as it came out in the issues, you know.
There are very few books that we've even bounced around the idea of doing an actual show about, you know, because we usually like to stay around, you know, a general topic and then, you know, news and whatnot. But I think Black Hole may be the first book that we can actually dedicate a show to and not even begin to describe how cool that book is.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic book.
It's actually, you know, for the hardcovers, what, $24 or something? Yeah. A great value. So pick that up. Let me see here. But I'm looking forward to seeing what Virgin puts out. I think it could be interesting.
And they're definitely, you know, building themselves to compete, so fingers crossed.
I'm going to actually add a news story here, and the reason I didn't put it on the news this week is because there was no official release about it. There was just some, you know, internet forum rumblings, and so everyone out there, get ready. Tom Caters is going to go on a huge rant about this, but the thing has been clobbered.
Has been pulled.
Oh. The thing has been pulled.
Yeah, as a couple days ago, I would have just called everyone stupid for not buying it, but I think I've tempered my... It's just the thing about it that bothers me the most is that in the big two companies, which are, you know, the major sort of players in comics, have become so homogenous over the years. Not that they weren't always homogenous, but now it's just becoming like more and more apparent that the audience that buys superhero comics, I think, is becoming even sort of narrower in what they're willing to buy. So I see a lot of people on the internet talk about how the thing was not, you know, like, I wouldn't consider it a superhero book, or people just wrote it off as like a joke book.
I love that a comic book about a giant man made of rocks who hangs out with the Fantastic Four can be debated as not being a superhero book.
Yeah, it's just sort of like, there's no room for it. Like, sort of, it's just like a concern I have with about how these companies are, maybe they'll be good for independent books because... I go to independent books for that type of humor now because the big two aren't going to give you anything like that. The big two are going to give you what people want apparently to buy from them, which is the sort of middle ground drama, which has its place, and I enjoy that too. But both of them definitely are cutting out anything, you know. Not that the Marvel needs to have to publish the thing, but it sort of concerns me that there isn't like a market within the comic buyers for that type of book, which I thought was...
Well, but, you know, though, at the same time, though, look at something like She-Hulk. I mean, there is that kind of... I mean, Slot She-Hulk is kind of a similar vein.
But that's also because Marvel was willing to push She-Hulk. It was like once the thing started off with 30,000 sales, you never saw... You know, that's a small number one issue for any comic book. At that point, you're thinking... Oh God, it's going to get canceled because any book drops about 20% from number one to like number two. and already it's in danger. I kind of get the feeling that it was sort of just written off at that point and not really given the same support She-Hulk was. But if
my biggest concern is just that you know, my friend Kieran Dwyer was doing the art on what's going to be the last three issues, and I just it's just great stuff, and I love like being able to go out and see his work on it every month. So
yeah,
that sucks all around.
I'm just being a cranky old man.
Well, you know, first of all, it's not Marvel's fault.
No, it's not Marvel's fault. It's just it's the only thing I would blame it for is not sort of giving it the same support that She-Hulk had, almost in a way. But they're not obligated to do that.
They canceled, but I mean, they canceled She-Hulk too.
Yeah, they might bring the thing back.
You know, I've never heard so much forum chatter and people screaming about a book being canceled because of low sales. I mean, I think that all 18,000 people that buy the thing jumped on a forum this week and just screamed just at the top of their lungs.
You know, tyranny of democracy.
You know, where I go on a rant about really good, you know, independent books out there, Queen and Country, that really should be picked up and bought by people, I can't get that upset about the thing. It's like,
Chris,
you know what?
God.
Old Ben is going to be fine. He's going to be in the Fantastic Four. Dan Slott is a hell of a writer. He's not going away.
No, but I like the thing, and I think I should get to complain that the thing, you know, you can take that Queen and Country cross off your back now. You know, like, all I'm complaining about is the thing was a good book, and there's enough room for Queen and Country and the thing.
You know, I'd also like to point out that Queen and Country sells about 5,000 copies a month.
Thank you.
Well, that's the other thing. Canceled, you know, I'm sure all 5,000 of those people would complain too.
What I don't understand is what Marvel's policy is for, you know, where a book drops down to. Because I was looking at some numbers on the thing in its first four issues, and the numbers were comparable to like the last 6 or 8 months of Spider-Girl. Yet they're not canceling that book.
They're trying to get it to 100, I think. Aren't they?
Yeah, they keep.
They were going to cancel it, and then a lot of fans.
That's the book that won't die. Seriously, that thing has been on the border of being canceled for so long.
So is it just a marketing ploy by Marvel to say, "Hey, we're going to cancel this book," but unless people like have an outcry for Thing, you know, for the Thing, or they'll bring it back, maybe.
Well, Matt, didn't you say that that Joe Q in his Cup of Joe had some stuff to say about the Thing?
Or whatever the Friday column it is on Newsarama, okay. He mentioned that, you know, if the trade did well, of course they would look at bringing the series back. I don't have it in front of me, so I don't remember what the exact words were.
I think that's a perfect book for trade, because that just seems to, in the, you know, the comic collector mentality that's out right now of the I'll wait for the trade. There has to be a ton of people out there that says, oh, I hear it's really funny, but I'm not going to put it on my pull list because I hear it's going to get canceled anyway, so I'll just wait for the trade. Yeah, so I expect the sales on that trade to do pretty well. So
we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see. We'll see.
All right, so we're going to stop talking about the thing here. So like I said, Dan Slott's a hell of a writer. He'll be fine, and this is not the last.
We can stop talking about it, but don't stop thinking about it, everyone.
Don't tell me what to think.
If you're going to buy a thing, go buy Queen and Country.
Boom, add some nitroglycerin. Has anybody checked out the nitroglycerin webcomic at boomstudios.com?
I did.
Yes? Yeah.
Well, I will.
Yeah. I think they only have one out so far. So. Okay.
Good?
Yeah, it was funny. It was sort of like their editor. I can't think of the guy's name, the guy who runs Boom, but it was
Ross?
Him. What?
Ross.
Ross Ritchie. Is that his name?
Yeah. Ross Ritchie.
Yeah.
And it was him introducing what was coming out from Boom, and he was drawn as a Cthulhu character, and everything was Cthulhu related.
Nice.
It was funny. It's kind of a cool little thing. Yeah.
I wanted to make sure and get a Boom Studios story in this week. You know, I thought that the whole thing about their forum, they got that set up, which is cool. But we're starting to be pretty big fans of Boom because they have been really awesome about getting in touch with us and sending us press releases. And we actually got some great Boom Studio preview copies of some books this week. And so they've been really good to us,
and they've put out good books.
Absolutely. So I think we're actually talk about some of those a little bit later. But there is a reason that Boom Studios was the best new publisher of the year And I would encourage you to check out anything that Boom is putting out. Next is Vertigo has announced a heaping helping of trades coming out, and they are all very reasonably priced. And looks like Loveless, DMZ, Testament, The Exterminators, and American Virgin will all be hitting the trade paperback shelves by, I think, October was the last of those release dates, and they're all priced at $9.99.
They also put out another press release about a whole nother list of trades that Wildstorm is putting out, too. So they're at the same kind of good pricing. And
yeah, go to Around Comics.
I think they're trying to, really amp up their trade release schedules, it seems.
Yeah, you know what's good? Aren't the Vertigo books, at least, like, aren't those trades that they've announced collecting issues that haven't been published yet?
I think they're starting to solicit them. It's like American Virgin is only on, like, issues two, I think.
Three.
So that's being solicited, I believe, for, like, an October release.
It's just interesting that Dan DiDio talks about how if you're waiting for the trade, then they're not doing their job. it's gonna be interesting to see, like, if that affects the book sales, because you know there are gonna be people who hear about these trades coming out and think, well, screw it, I'm not gonna get the monthlies if the trade's already been solicited.
For some of those people, better buy the trade, because I think Exterminators is now the lowest selling DC book.
Well, they should buy the monthlies. I mean, the trade sales are, the trades are evergreen product. It's the month in, month out stuff of the monthlies that are gonna save that book.
It's now the lowest, the lowest non-canceled DC book.
Well, it is kind of interesting that DC's sort of, you know, on one end they're not releasing any trades for 52 or Infinite Crisis until the whole thing's done. But then,
The Infinite Crisis hardcover is coming out.
Yeah, they solicited that. Get the hardcover.
Then I guess it's just 52. 52 is what they're not. Yeah, 52. They're not doing the trade until.
I can't believe 52 is almost over.
126 of the way through, guys.
I know, just seriously, it's only 50 weeks left. You're gonna look back and just, you're gonna wonder where the time
is. I've already speculated on all 50 issues what's gonna happen.
I can't believe that it's so close to finishing, or we've made it this far.
It feels that close to me.
It's almost too much. I've read the first two issues now, and it's like, I don't know if I can handle this much Elongated Man.
Wrong. You can have as much Elongated Man as anybody.
That's definitely going to get our explicit tag.
You can take all the Elongated Man in as human movie.
So, when do you think the first Punisher War General trade will be announced?
Yeah, I have no idea.
During this podcast. Yeah. It just was.
Yes, we've just gotten a PR from...
just got an email from Marvel.
Yeah. Hang on. Axel Alonso just shot me in the neck with a blowgun. I'm blacking out.
Matt, do you read Exterminators?
I have them. I'm so behind, it's not even funny.
Quite simply,
a lot of stuff I've not read.
It is one of the most bizarre yet finest comic books published today. That is.
You're not the first person to say that to me.
Just to say, there is a panel with a cockroach that roars. You know, if that's like any,
and it scares you.
And
when
it scares you. It's not funny. It's frightening.
It takes pest control to a whole new level. And
I've got them here. I haven't
read them right now. No way.
Well, you're
okay. Just put it on pause. I'll be right back.
It would be worth it. That's actually fellow Kansas Cityan Tony Moore.
Which is kind of embarrassing. So it's kind of good that Tony and I haven't gotten that cup of coffee we keep threatening each other with, because I can't talk to him about his new book.
Yeah, you're going to have to go speed read Walking Dead Volume 1 and 2 and Exterminators.
I liked the book with all of the roaches.
You did, you really did a great job on the bugs.
So Tony, let's talk about you. How are you?
What are you reading?
I hear you do a zombie book. Is it out yet?
All right, guys. Dynamite Entertainment is talking about issue 0 for the all-new Highlander comic book. So there can be only one. And
Zero.
Once again, we always get these stories about these licensed properties that are being converted to comic books, and I get excited about some of them. I'm really excited about Rick Remender's run on Battlestar Galactica coming up, but are we interested in the Clan MacLeod coming to comics?
Well, I have to say that the press release gets me fired up with the use of the term dizzying heights.
Yes.
It's very flowery language.
Dizzying heights of pre-orders.
I'll go rewatch Highlander, and then I'll decide.
As long as it's based on the first Highlander and not the second Highlander film.
It is based on characters from the very first movie of the franchise.
Conan McCloud.
Finally, somebody's going to talk about Christopher Lambert in 1985.
But, you know, one of the guys working on this is Michael Avon Oeming.
He is.
Yes, he is.
What's he doing on it?
Read your own press releases.
I don't
Good
have time,
Lord.
Man. I got to type them out, and people sending me stuff every day.
Yeah, it's Mike Oeming is going to be writing on that. It's not going to be art. He's he's doing like half the writing duties. It looks like. So I mean, have you guys been picking up of any of Oeming's work, like Red Sonja, and then he was doing Ares is another book that is really good.
Ares was a book that I didn't pick up, and I was guilty of the waiting for the trade on that. Two issues came out, and I almost picked them up, but I'm like, I'll just wait for the, you know. But I should have probably picked them up. But I've heard that's really good. I haven't read it, but I've heard it's excellent, and you know.
Yeah, Matt, have you read any of Oeming's stuff?
I have it, but I have some of it, but I haven't read. I haven't.
You just have piles and piles of comics.
I
could take a freaking picture, and you would laugh at me. I look like a crazy schizophrenic that never goes out of the house.
We'll expect that on the forum.
Well, you know, with us, you know, doing the whole podcast thing, there's like this bizarre sense of, you know, urgency.
Obligation.
Yeah, this sense of obligation that we have to read everything, and my to-read pile actually fell over the other day, and my neighbors came up to ask me if I was okay.
Wow.
you were trapped underneath it.
Well, while I do feel that same obligation, I will say anyone that sends me free comics, I'll put those right on the top of the stack there.
We love you, Boom Studios. Yeah. Boom Studios
and
is man, the greatest
Matt,
publisher.
Matt sent us.
Yeah, Image has done a great job. All right, so Highlander the comic, it's coming out. This is one that I'm really excited about, and this is the Chris Ware exhibit in Chicago, which I think he's going to be there tomorrow, which when you listen to this episode, he will have been there the previous Saturday.
It's like Casanova. It's a mind twister.
It is.
In the future.
I have to travel back in time and kill Chris Ware.
But not before his next issue of Acme Novelty Library comes out.
Also, I was just going to say like 1997. I kind of blew the joke there. How embarrassing. You would edit that out, right?
No.
You know, I enjoy that. It's probably the closest thing to a coffee table book I have of a comic. And I enjoy the Novelty Library, but
I don't understand it. It's that guy. Talk about somebody with, like, he must have, like, OCD or something.
Tesla-like intelligence.
I mean, the guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know that's all hand-drawn, right? You know, he doesn't use a computer. Yeah. He doesn't use any mechanical.
It's insane.
Right?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's the most astonishing, one of the most astonishing graphic novelists working today.
Well, that's what I'm excited about is that, you know, I get some of the collections, but I've never seen any of the work in person. And there's apparently a huge exhibit at the Museum of Contemporary Art. So go to mcachicago.org.
Yeah, it's running through August.
And read about what you missed.
No, well, he's going to be there personally tomorrow, but the
exhibit is up.
The exhibit's there till August.
Yeah, August 27th. So I will say for people that are coming in for Wizard World Chicago, which is the first weekend in August, if you're from out of town, you should get out and see the city a little bit. The Museum of Contemporary Art is gorgeous. It is downtown. You owe it to yourself to go and check it out. And there's going to be a comic book exhibit there. So, you know, what else do you need? So,
and Wizard has such like a crossover market with people who read Chris Ware comics. It goes together like peanut butter and chocolate.
Oh, I mean, he's in the top 10 like every week. You know, right by George Perez. It's awesome. So. We reported on it last week. There's a really cool set of DVDs that are available called Hooked on Comics. And it's a bunch of underground comic artists and writers and like really funny interviews with them. And the second volume is the Chicago scene and has Chris Ware and a bunch of other folks. So a reminder to check that out if you're a Chris Ware fan.
Can you say what is that called?
It's called Hooked on Comics. Okay. And I'll just tell you, if you go to www.aroundcomics.com, it's in one of the news headlines.
Excellent.
We're so kind that we'll email you the link to it.
Oh,
Our last story here, and see that Marvel is infringing on our territory. They're starting these podcasts up. Those jerks. So, no, I thought
a bunch of charmless losers.
No, this is actually pretty cool. For anyone that had a chance to listen to it, it was Paul Jenkins, Tom Brevoort, and Corey Settlemyer were talking about Civil War Frontline, which Sal and I have talked about. I'm actually maybe even a little bit more interested in Frontline than I am in Civil War. And so they talked about that, and it was very, very informative.
Did you see Paul Jenkins' thing on Newsarama where he was describing why he was acting the way he was during the podcast? It's because his, like, wife was in labor, mm-hmm. and he had to run to, like,
He's got that flogging a dead horse is his column on Newsarama. It's hilarious stuff.
He's talking about why it just didn't answer anything.
that's kind of funny because Sal was actually one of the first people that...
I was the second person that knew his wife was pregnant.
Yeah.
Amazingly enough, and yeah. It was
the first being God.
No, the first was his father, I believe. Oh, okay. And I was the second person he told
father in heaven.
after meeting me at Wizard World Chicago. I didn't know him or anything. Yeah. I didn't even know who he was when I talked to him, and then once I did know who he was, I mean, I knew Paul Jenkins. I just didn't know what he looked like. But yeah, I was like the second person on the planet to know it.
He was just like bubbling.
So, yeah, he
to
was
tell
just
someone.
So, and he figured I was just this anonymous person that he could
you
tell.
Stranger. Hey,
yeah,
you stranger.
Yeah, exactly.
Nine months later, it's on a podcast.
Yeah, no kidding.
Ha ha, Paul.
I kept the secret for him.
Though. Yeah.
So you weren't the guy who started Paul Jenkins' wife is pregnant.com?
No, that wasn't me. I don't know who that was.
You went immediately to Newsarama to post it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No, he's the guy that started the MattFractionIsPregnant.com.
No. I have more stories from that convention than most people.
So many that just can't be repeated.
Yes.
Speaking of podcasts, I meant to ask you earlier, Matt, is this your first podcasting experience?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So
I did a phone interview that I think is going to a podcast, but this is my first actual, like, I'm sitting here talking to my laptop like a crazy person podcast experience.
Like a crazy, hunched over with your face like an inch away from the screen.
Yeah, no, you're not too far off from the truth.
Well, hopefully when Punisher War Journal hits stands, I'd like to see Marvel continue these podcasts because they're actually very cool, and it would be great to hear you talk about Punisher's role in Civil War. So I hope that they...
No. It would be better for him to come back on Around Comics podcast and talk about Punisher's role in Civil War.
It would just be awesome for me to talk about Punisher's role.
Well, that would, yeah.
To anyone.
It would be a letter. Via letters.
Go to confession or something and spill all these Civil War things that I know that I had to, you know, sign papers swearing that I wouldn't talk about.
Dearest Around Comics,
yeah, but
here's what happens.
For you, and back to Civil War, how cool... Shut up, Tom. How cool is... I mean, this is a huge event, and we're absolutely loving it. How cool is it to be actually part of Civil War?
It's completely terrifying. It's awesome. It's really incredible, and it's a very fun, very bizarre experience, and I'm having the time of my life.
Yeah.
Does Mark Millar and Joe Quesada just threaten you on a daily basis not to screw things up?
Not to my face, maybe. and it's Brevoort with a hard E. And Miller, actually.
No, that's right.
Yeah, I've told you it's Miller.
I know it is.
And it's Brevoort. Brevoort?
Miller.
Brevoort, yeah. Tom Brevoort and Brevoort. Miller.
Yeah,
I say that not out of interest in correcting you, but I myself had trouble with those names for a very long time, and it wasn't until I heard, like, people who know the guys saying it again and again. So
okay,
maybe somebody listening to this will sort of secretly...
Alex Malev or Alex Malev?
I believe it's Malev, but don't... I'm not 100% sure about that.
Well, I got nothing to say because I couldn't even... I wasn't sure how to pronounce your artist on Casanova's last name, and it's just two letters.
Ba?
Yeah, well, but it looks too simple.
Ba.
It couldn't just... It's got that little...
It's Bay.
It's got that little thing on the A, and it's got to be something strange. I don't know.
Matt Fraction?
Yar, like a pirate. Yar.
Matt Fraction.
All right, guys. Well, I think that is going to wrap.
I did want to add one uh-huh. news item, which will probably be on the news next week, but I just want to mention it was Alex Toth or Toth.
Oh, yeah.
Alex Toth
letters or something.
But, yeah, there's a gentleman, I think his name is John Hitchcock. He was a comic book or a comic shop owner, and in 25 years ago, he started writing to Alex Toth, and they had this like pen pal relationship for 25 years, and in it, he collected all this original artwork and you know sketches and letters and stuff from him, and he's recently published a book with all that material in there, and after the printing costs are paid for, all the proceeds are going to Alex Toth or Toth.
Is it Toth?
It's Toth. I'm not sure how
Just call him Alex.
Yeah,
just call
him Alex. He's been in the hospital for a little while, so.
Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that, you know, because not only is would that, you know, just, I've heard he's an amazing, like, letter writer. He just loves to correspond with people, and there's been a lot of people that have said, you know, over the years that they've written back and forth with him. But, yeah, I'm sure he could use the dough, too, so.
Okay.
Like, yeah, I mean, he's like I said, he's been in the hospital like the last month or so. I think he's out, but I don't know about that.
Yeah, I believe he is, but yeah, he was in for a while. So.
Well, folks,
I mean, he's one of the absolute titans of this industry. None of us would be here were it not for him.
Yeah, I completely agree. As a kid, I was a huge Zorro fan, and his stuff was just, you know.
Well, I mean, he did like every character sheet for Hanna-Barbera in the 70s. Uh-huh. You know?
Really?
He's amazing. I mean, and he's one of those guys that just. Most people don't know about him for whatever reason. I mean, you know, it's like everybody knows Kirby or, you know, even Ditko or, you know, guys, you know, but Will Eisner has become...
Well, but Kirby, Ditko, and Eisner knew Toth, and that's what counts.
Yeah, true enough.
Yeah, and that's the idea. Well, check that story out at Around Comics. I'm sure that we will report on that again. I think that was a late entry into the news a day after we recorded it. Guys, that's going to wrap up our news for the week. That means it is time for Top of the Stack.
Top of the Stack. Stack.
That's right. It's time for Top of the Stack. Our chance to let you, the listener, know what we have been reading for the last week. I tell you what, we'll start out with Sal this week. Sal, what is your Top of the Stack?
My Top of the Stack this week is Captain America number 18, written by Ed Brubaker and drawn by Steve Epting, with colors by, is it Frank DiArmada? I believe is his name.
We're going to butcher every name in the comics industry today.
Pronounce anything. But, I mean, everybody's talked about how good this Captain America has been since Ed Brubaker took over, and I agree, it's phenomenal. This book, this particular issue really, I don't know, there was something about it that really struck me because of the way... the basic premise of it is Cap is in London, and he's looking for someone, and he's find some old friends to help him out, and it's Union Jack and Spitfire, who he used to work for. But the whole...
Thanks for spoiling it.
Yeah, well, whatever. The whole time that they're together, it wasn't these three superheroes, you know, getting together and go, hey, Cap, let's go. You know, it was three real people talking that obviously had, you know, friendship and history. And it was really just amazing to kind of see it in a mainstream comic like this, where these three people were just communicating as regular people, regardless of what their jobs are, it just sort of epitomized what Ed Brubaker has really been able to do with this book of just humanizing this iconic character of Captain America and really bringing life to that character and to the story as a whole. And the art is phenomenal as usual. Steve Epting's stuff is just gorgeous to look at and fits the book so well. And really, I, you know, one of the things that I never really mentioned is colorist, but on this book in particular, I think the colorist adds so much to the artwork. Those guys get looked over all the time, and
Maury Holloway's colors on Civil War were freaking gorgeous, by the way, speaking of colorists. So,
but everybody's talking about Cap, and it's obviously a great book, but this one in particular, it was just a matter of these three characters who obviously are long friends and working together, but it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't your cliche sort of heroes getting together and never talking to each other with their real names. And that was sort of the one thing that throughout the entire three or four conversations they had together, they never used their superhero names. It was all Steve and Joey and it was just very humanizing. So that's my Top of the Stack.
So Brubaker's hit another one out of the park.
Yeah, I mean, it's just consistently good. the guy is a very talented writer, and I love the stuff that he's doing on Cap and Daredevil, and can't wait to see his X-Men.
Wait until you see Criminal.
Yeah, that's I've heard. Has that been announced, though? I mean, that kind of came out in Warren Ellis's Bad Signal newsletter, but nobody's really. Is that
official, Matt? Do you think we can mention that?
What, Criminal?
Yeah.
I know Ed and Sean are doing a book called Criminal.
All right, guys, look for a new book, and it's not going to be under the Marvel imprint.
Well, so. The rumor is it's going to be under Icon, and yeah. It's Sean Phillips and Ed.
Ed gets, I think, the best work out of Sean Phillips, and I mean, I'm a friend and a fan of Joe Casey. That's a tough call for me to say, but. Sean Phillips is a genius, and he is so wonderfully matched with Brubaker. The book is going to shear the top of your head right off.
Well, anybody that read Sleeper, I mean, those guys were on Sleeper together, and that was a phenomenal book. Yeah, so
okay, Jim Rome.
It was phenomenal.
Hey, I'm a huge fan of Sleeper, and I think I turned you on to Sleeper before Ed actually signed up with Marvel. So that was love that book.
I don't know.
All right, we're digressing. Tom, what is your top of the stack this week?
It was a tough week for me because I really wanted to maintain my streak of gorilla or ape themed top of the stacks, but I really wanted to pick Shadow Pact because it had Detective Chimp. But I finished the first trade for Seven Soldiers by Grant Morrison, and it's very rare that I read something that completely blows me away, and this did. It's amazing to me that one person could write four such totally different storylines within one trade that all kind of interweave together on some level. And the artists all fit the individual stories. If people don't know what it is, this has kind of been going on the same time as Infinite Crisis, but Morrison's writing these seven different miniseries that are all sort of intertwining together to tell one big story, and they're all sort of minor characters in the DC universe. But they
work individually, too.
Yep, they all work individually, but if you read all of them together, too, they also sort of fit together the same. So it's a really cool, concept in and of itself, and just out of curiosity, it's interesting to read it to see how well he pulls it off. And in the first trade, I gotta say, he does a really great job. I mean, you have story with a medieval knight, getting stuck in modern day New York. You have a vigilante who works for a newspaper who has to fight New York subway pirates. You have Zatanna who can't remember how to, use her magic. And then you have this rather goth looking witch boy who lives underground. And it's just these four totally different stories that you wouldn't think could work together thematically, but they actually all fit together really well, and all the artists are perfect for the story they're reading, and it just really blew me away, even though there was not one single talking ape or ape dressed as a human, which usually
you're just trying to bust out of your box, Tom.
Yeah, I know. I was like,
can't box me in.
No, as I was getting towards the end, and I'm like, okay, there's time for one, just an ape to show up at some point, and I was like,
now if you go in, there's a kind of a Justice League lead-in to Seven Soldiers that was called. There's in the first three issues of Justice League Classified.
Oh yeah.
Morrison wrote it and Ed McGuinness drew it, but Gorilla Grodd is in that. So
yep, I have read that. Yeah.
We found our connection.
Thank you for justifying
6 degrees of Simeon connection.
The streak is alive.
Yeah, totally justify what I did. Oh, and one last thing. Ryan Suk, for people that read X Factor, he was doing the art for that. He does the Zatanna issues, and he does a fantastic job.
Yeah, and there's J.H. Williams, III. He's awesome.
And Simon Bianchi. Difficult name to pronounce.
Bianchi, just like the serial killer.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Sorry.
Okay. That's weird.
What?
And Dahmer, and Mark Dahmer, and John Gacy. No, I'm done.
Okay.
Continue. Somebody else.
My book this week is one that is, it's getting just an amazing amount of play from people, so I almost feel like I'm a little bandwagon jumper here with it, but my book this week is Mouse Guard, and I've got the second one here. It is just a fun cute, amazing little book. It's a square format. It is written and drawn by David Peterson. It is put out by ASP. That's a Archaea Studios Press. Retails for $350, so it's a little bit more than your standard comic, but it is just a wonderful little book. It's just maybe a hair too adult to read to a kid, but it is so much like what children's books should be, but there's still like this really neat underlying, you know, adult feel to it. First of all, Peterson's art, whenever you open this thing up, you feel like you're reading a classic children's book. And it's beautifully drawn, it's beautifully colored. It's about mice that are basically little, so they're like espionage mice, little special ops mice.
Night.
And it feels very, very aged, so it feels very, very old. But the one line whenever you open up the second issue is, send any mouse to do the job. It may or may not be done. Ask the guard to do the task. Even death cannot prevent it from completion. And it's great. It's just these mice who are a part of this, you know, special guard for the crown or whatever, and they're trying to track down a traitor, and there's another one that's, you know, off trying to find out information, and gets into this huge battle with these crabs. And it's Mouse Guard is a very unique, very fun, very old feeling read. It's one that whenever you put it down, you can't help but smile and feel like you just read something that was very good and very fun. So anyway, Mouse Guard, check it out. I really enjoyed it, and I think it's has a chance of being something that a few years ago or a few years from now people are still talking about. So
who publishes that?
It's I said ASP, but it's Archaea. It's ARCHAIA Studios Press, Archaea.
I think it's self-published, so I think that's his studio.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm not positive on that, but
we're gonna need a pronunciation key for this episode.
No doubt. It says, you know, it's printed in Hong Kong. There's let me see. Yeah, if you go to aspcomics.com, you can get some information on it. And this is one that just caught some buzz through a lot of the, you know, people kind of gotten the know on it. It kept getting buzz from, you know, this website and that website, and I know a lot of podcasts have been talking about it, and you can't find the first issue, and I think it's either on its second or third printing now. So nope, there's our first cell phone of the episode.
Awesome.
it is a wonderful book. So yeah, Matt, I have a feeling that you probably read just about anything. It's
Secret of Nim.
If you like Secret of Nim, this is right up your alley.
Oh, I'll check it out.
Yeah, very fun. So, Mr. Fraction, what is your top of the stack this week?
The best. Are you reading The Winter Men by Ben Lewis and John Polyon?
Oh yeah, good stuff.
Holy Christ, is this book amazing? The fourth issue just came out, and nobody is reading it, and nobody is talking about it. Or rather, the people that read it completely love it. So I want to do everything I can to anybody hearing the sound of my voice, go to your store right now and demand a copy of it. It was a book that Warren Ellis turned me on to, and it is so well written. The language is the closest thing to Deadwood that I've encountered in a comic book. It's such a joy, a physical joy to read, and it's just completely captivating. And it's a Wildstorm book that Brett Lewis is writing and John Polyon is drawing, and it's completely amazing. It's about Soviet superheroes after Glasnost. And then the other thing I've been reading are a bunch of manga scanslations that I stole off the internet called Pluto. It is done by Naoki Urasawa, who's the guy that did Monster, that Viz is printing now, which is phenomenal. But Pluto is him actually doing like an ultimate Astro Boy story, sort of. He's taking a famous Astro Boy story and kind of telling it in a very modern way, and it's incredible.
Cool. I just got my copy of Monster back from Sal, so it's after I finish reading Black Hole and the 8.5-foot pile of to read comics. It's right in there. So
yeah, this is what he followed Monster up with.
Okay, how many volumes of Monster ended up getting published?
I think it's like 18 are going to be all together. I think only like 2 or 3 are out already.
I'm waiting for the omnibus.
Yeah,
it's 18 all in all. But go read Winterman if you're not. Go demand it because there's no guarantee it's coming to trade. It's not doing so well enough that Wildstorm would necessarily think it's worth their while. So go support the issues that are out there.
Awesome. I'll back you up on Winterman. That is, it's a beautiful book and very well written. It's just one that, you know, we're Mouse Guard we talked about, you know, got some buzz. No, you're right. No one talks about the Winterman, and it's one that I forget to talk about.
I have all the issues, and I haven't. I've read the first one, and I got about 3/4 of the way done with it. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to read this yet. I'm just going to grab them all and read it once I have them all because it is great. I mean, what I got from it was just amazing. But it seems like it's something that I want to read.
Yeah, no, it definitely doesn't. I mean, it's. There's like heavy lifting involved, you know what I mean? It's not going to do the work for you. But God, it's so rewarding. Well, it's just a shame that like a brilliant book like this isn't getting more attention.
Well, hopefully, you know, that's a ways lead on to ways, and you know, hopefully the guys that are involved in that leads on to something, because you know, it's Axel Alonso didn't pull your name out of a hat. And, you know, hopefully this is, you know, a situation where those guys really, you know.
Well, they might have.
Well,
yeah, I don't know that. I've often wondered, so I'll take your word for it.
Well, guys, I think that will do it for Top of the Stack. We're going to move on to some announcements here. And let me see here. Mr. Salazar, do we have any? Huh?
What?
No.
Website, anything
going on?
I haven't put up any new Easter eggs on the website recently. I'm trying to think. We are working on a mobilization thing where you can get like your Around Comics podcast on your phone or your BlackBerry device, but something screwy with the feed on that, but that should be fixed soon.
Gadget freaks.
Yeah, the forum is going strong. Come to our forum and, you know, post away.
Oh, I would like to, yeah, some of the forum members I'd like to thank this week are Papercut, B Bowles, D Drace, Darth Kramer's always. I mean, these guys are, you know, posting so much that I keep telling them, it's like, you guys are writing like these little novellas on stuff. Just write articles and submit them to the site, especially Papercut. I'm calling you out, pal, because some of his posts this week have just been, you know, I'm going to have to...
I've told him already. It's like he'll write these paragraphs of posts, of thread posts. I'm like, you know, with a little work, this could easily be an essay on the subject you're talking about. They're extremely well thought out and well written. It's just, you know, he's doing it at, you know, sort of first person, just it's just kind of rework them a little bit and come on, let's do some. But... yeah, absolutely. The forum seems to be going pretty strong. We're getting more and more listeners. The MySpace thing is working out for us. You know, nothing radical this week.
May contest. This episode comes out on Monday. You have till Wednesday. I think we're going to close off entries for topic suggestions. Once again, just send in a topic. You can either email it at info@aroundcomics.com or post it on the forum. The winning topic, which I think we're going to end up pulling out of a hat because we have so many of them, is going to get your choice of any in-print trade paperback, $24.95 or less, and we'll send that to you. So you have till Wednesday to get those in. And we've had some amazing entries so far. Around Comics and Dark Tower are pleased to announce that Michael Avery and Joe Bucco, the creators of Werewolves Call of the Wild, will be in store and in studio on Friday, June 30th for a book signing and guest appearance on the show. Check out their book at cotwcomic.com and listen to Around Comics for more information on the appearance as it draws closer. we're now offering occasionally midweek shows. They're available for download on Thursdays, I think. So
yeah, I think we're going to put them out on Thursdays.
So look for those on Thursdays. They are shorter versions of the regular Around Comics show without wire-to-wire comic news and top-of-the-stack segments. I think Tom has a prior engagement tonight, and Sal is nearing his deathbed in sickness. You've been very good to not cough all over the mic.
He's bleeding.
Yeah, he's so doped up on NyQuil. That's why he didn't ramble a whole lot tonight. So I think we're going to skip the midweek episode this week. So
it's like Elvis towards the end.
That's really all the announcements I have. Tom, thanks for coming by as usual.
I have nothing to do on Friday nights, so you've beat out drinking by myself.
Sal, I want you to get feeling
better.
That's
how we get all our guests.
And Matt Fraction, man, any time you ever want to come back on the show, you are more than welcome. We've had a blast with you tonight.
It would be a joy to come back. Thank you, and thank you so much for supporting Casanova. You guys are really sort of not quite the first review, but very, very close. And thank you very much. It means a lot to me.
You're absolutely welcome. We're very very happy to do that for a book that, you know, may not get the same kind of mainstream press, but people should absolutely pick up. I'd hate to see, you know, people miss out on that book.
But if anything
I can do for you guys, let me know.
Well, if you write a bad issue, we'll turn on you
in a heartbeat. Like, you know,
quick, it's unbelievable. It will be unbelievable.
The fall is fast, my friend.
When you get to like the halfway point of number five, if it seems bad, it's because that's what I'm doing immediately after.
It's just obviously. <really. laughs>
Well, I tell you what, I think...
Casanova sits down and has a piece of pie.
And just thinks.
For like 9 pages, it's awesome.
Is this pie from this world or another world?
Hey, if a gorilla shows up in that issue somewhere, we know.
Yeah, we know. Well,
Tom, can I send you a copy of Mantooth to Dark Tower?
Yeah, sure. I would love
totally
it, actually.
Will.
Yeah.
Send it to him. I'll sell it.
Yeah. Don't sell it to Dark Tower. Those boys will just turn around and sell it right out from under him.
No. Sell it to Tom. I don't care.
It's always Tom. Not to me. At a reasonable rate.
Well, Matt, we loved having you on the show.
Again, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, best of luck, everyone out there. If you don't pick up Casanova, you're a damn fool.
And we will hunt you down.
And I am telling you what to buy. That's our new mantra on the show.
Not only buy it, but read it.
Yeah, twice, 3 times.
Bite 3 times and read it once.
I'm just happy to be here.
All right, guys.
I'm not threatening or cajoling anyone. That's what I
mean. Well, we are. Thank you for listening to Around Comics. Have a fantastic week, and join us again as we reshuffle the round table for a whole new episode next Monday of Comic News, Reviews, and Opinions. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in and around comics.
Hail Satan.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for this show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week. With a panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.